My pleasure to introduce our guest today, David Lippman, law school class of 1982, and his classmate, Bob Diener, therefore also law school class of 1982. Bob and Dave call themselves serial entrepreneurs, and you'll hear more about that. They met in law school. David actually had done 4 years of service earlier here in Ithaca. He got his undergraduate degree from Cornell University, and Bob from the University of Florida. But they met here at the law school, graduated in 1982, took jobs with major corporations, Gibson, Dunn and Crutcher in Los Angeles, Johnson & Swanson in Dallas. But shortly after that, they united with Business Ventures, first in the airline ticket business. Sold that. They went into the hotel business with what eventually became Hotels.com. Sold that. Went into other ventures. Their latest, just this year, they've launched GetARoom.com. So I think they really are serial entrepreneurs. And so it's my pleasure to greet and welcome David Lippman and Bob Diener. Thanks for being with us today.
All right, there's three people on an airplane flight, an optimist, a pessimist, and a bureaucrat, okay? And the plane starts going down. What does the optimist do? The optimist says, well, you know, I don't need to jump out of a plane and take a parachute and jump to the ground. I can fly this plane. I saw the movie Airplane. And, you know, the pilot from the control tower can walk me down. The pessimist says, what's the point of jumping out of the plane? We're all going to die. What's the point of doing it? We're just going to go down. I might as well accept my fate. The bureaucrat says, let's form a committee with the other two passengers and look at the code red kind of situation in airplane design. But the conservative entrepreneur is not even on the plane because he was using frequent flyer miles and got bumped. So, starting a new business is one of the surest ways to financial success, but most people think you have to mortgage the house, max out your credit cards, borrow every cent of your inheritance from mom and dad, and take all kinds of personal and professional risks. Bob and I have been in business together for approximately 25 years or more, and we've adopted a philosophy that we like to call conservative entrepreneurship, which is basically a way to reduce risk and to create an environment where you're more likely to succeed. Our best known business is called Hotels.com, which we started. It was an overnight success story that took 12 years, and we started that, and sold it. We started it with $1,200 down. I think we did $1,200 investment. And when we sold it, the company, the final sale in 2003, I think the company was valued at $5.5 billion. So how do we get there? To be a conservative entrepreneur, you have to be careful, frugal. I used to put cheap up there, but it's just so tacky, right? We can call it frugal. But I like Sam's Club. Anyone shop there when they're not in Ithaca? There you go, my kind of people. All right, quick and innovative. So those are the kind of things that you're going to need to be as a conservative entrepreneur. And of course, be careful. What does it mean? So there are everyday risks that we take in life, and we just accept them as part of living. For example, when we go to classes today, we usually have to cross the street, and there's always a chance of being hit by a car, right? So, but you accept that risk. It's a small risk. You don't think that you're going to get hit by a car. You think it's all going to work out well, and you can say to yourself, well, you know, it's there. You know, we can do that, and it's no big deal. How many of you here in this room ride a motorcycle? Skydive. The jet uniform over there, skydives, scuba dive. One, two, three scuba divers. So you're taking a little extra risk. Just life is what it is, and you know, we're going to live it up a little bit, and we're going to take a little extra risk. And you can see that, does that enhance your life and opportunity? Maybe, but you are taking a little extra risk. So on the investment side, you've been taught that most investment risks look like this. So in other words, you look at risk and return. And you, on the left side of this chart, you would look at something like what? What would be on the left side of that chart if you were investing? T-bill, okay. And on the right side of the chart? There you go. That's right, hotels.com. Not Bernie Madoff, so hotels.com. So I would say that in business, I would say that more risk does not mean more return. The more risk you take does not mean that you will enhance your returns from that business. So I would say the chart looks something like this. And in fact, there was a study in 2004 from Inc. that said businesses that started with more than $100,000 had an average growth rate of over 5 years of about 800%. And businesses started out with $1,000 had an average growth rate of also 800%. However, only 50% of the companies that started out with $100,000 were profitable in 5 years. And 83% of the companies that started out with $1,000 were profitable in 5 years. Okay? A business that's not profitable is called a charity. Okay? A business that is profitable is a real business. So I would say risk and return, at least in our experience, have not been related. Let's go back a little bit. Boy, that is a hair trigger. Oops. Excuse me. Sorry about that, operator error. Let's try to go back toward the beginning. I'm sorry, folks. A little technical issue here. Okay, I'll operate without it. So be cheap. What does it mean? Okay, frugal, I'm sorry. Don't waste. Don't spend unless you have to. If you spend, spend as little as you can. At hotels.com, we first started out, we had no money. We had no cash flow. We had nothing. So, you know, we had employees. You know, we had about 200 employees, and we had to, you know, create something for them. We had to have a Christmas party for them. So how do we do the Christmas party? We sponsored it. We had someone like Delta Airlines or Choice Hotels or Marriott Hotels sponsor the Christmas party. And then we put their big banners in the corner, and we had the opportunity to work with them. And of course, they paid for the party. So that's one way we did it. Another way we did it was accumulated hotel points, frequent flyer points by paying the hotels on a credit card. Okay, so we accumulated all our travel budget and benefit on these frequent flyer points. So our cost of travel, we stayed at hotels that would give us rooms for free. We traveled using frequent flyer points. We had a plan where all you could do was if you wanted to eat, you had to, like, your daily budget was minimal, and you could only, you know, use a certain amount of money to do that. And so basically our travel was free. So we controlled expenses and we were cheap. The other thing is that people look at corporate money different than they look at individual money. Okay, so.
Use the keyboard.
Okay, we use the keyboard and we go up. Okay. We are right here.
Okay,
thank you. And so people look at corporate money different than they do individual money. $50,000 is a lot of money, right? It's a lot of money. Would it make a big difference in your personal life if someone handed you $50,000? Anyone say no? That person is buying me lunch. Whoever says no to that is buying me lunch. In a corporate setting, people treat $50,000 like it was dirt. Oh, $50,000, we'll get that new special machine, we'll do that new renovation of the office, we'll do this, we'll do that. You should treat corporate money just like you treat personal money. And you should never divorce it from what really it means. $50,000 is a lot of money. $50,000 is more than your Cornell tuition this year, okay? By a little bit, okay? But law school tuition anyway. Be quick. A lot of people in business school write these very long and extensive business plans, these 40-page business plans. Do we have any people from the Johnson School here today? Okay. Good. Then I can diss on them. The business plan that's 40 pages, if you're starting a new business, especially one that hasn't been done before, you can just about tear up the first minute you get into business. You can have a 2 or 3 page business plan tops, okay? Because immediately as you get into business, you see opportunities and things that change that are completely different than what you expected. And you need to figure out what they are. And Bob and I are both big believers in kind of like seeing what works, moving toward that, doing what your customers tell you they want, and then moving toward that business plan. And so at Hotels.com, for example, or we started out, it's called Hotel Reservations Network. We started out trying to collect commissions from hotels. So we would put people in hotels. It was in the days before the internet, if you can remember those days. And we, you know, someone would call up on the phone, where would you like to stay? Sheraton, Chicago, fine. They'd stay at the Sheraton. And then we'd put them in the hotel. And then we'd, you know, they'd check out and we'd wait for the check. And we'd stand by the mailbox and we'd look at our watch and we'd wait for the check and the check wouldn't come. We'd call the Sheraton. And the Sheraton would say they never stayed here. Mrs. Smith, did you stay here? Yes, we stayed here. Oh, they did stay here, but they stayed here on a government rate. Mrs. Smith, did you stay here on a government rate? No, we didn't stay here on a government rate. We actually paid for it. You know, Sheraton, where's our money? Oh, we'll send it soon. So this clearly wasn't a business method that was going to work. You know, we were getting paid maybe 60% of the commissions we would do. So we adapted, and we created what's now called the merchant model, which is we saw that airline tickets were being purchased at the time that you reserved them and not at the time you flew. So we thought, okay, maybe we can do that with hotels if we give people a discount for it. So in other words, you pay at the time you book the hotel room, not at the time you stay at the hotel. That was different at the time. So we did that, and it worked. And we were able to do that. So anyway, be quicker than your competitors and fight bureaucracy. We love all of those. Innovation. Most people think that entrepreneurship is like, I'm going to create a better dog collar. This is going to be the best product on earth. I'm going to market the heck out of it. And that's how I'm going to make my fortune on this one product. And that's just not the way it is. You know, you can't base something on one product or one idea or one single thought. It's about execution of multiple different things. And there are companies that have adopted kind of a systematic way to create ideas. I mean, the prime example is, you know, a company that you are all aware of, Apple. How many people have Macs or Apple computers? How many people have PCs? Okay, it used to be pretty much Macs were the exception and PCs were kind of the norm. I notice now in colleges especially, your law students, you're all old now, but colleges especially, the Mac world is predominating now. How many of you have iPhones? No one? One? One iPhone? Two? Two iPhones? Going once? Okay. So, again, that's a company that systematically innovated. They had a company when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, they had a clunky old line of computers, and that's all they had, and an operating software that was dated and 12 years old. So what they did was they created silos of people who systematically went about trying to create new products and processes. And it was totally outside the box, for example, for Apple to think of getting into telephony. I mean, they had been a computer company, and they had done operating systems, and they had never done anything remotely related to telephony. And that's and they created a whole different division and a whole different opportunity, and they created a telephone system. Toyota. I mean, Toyota has done something classic, which is they avoided commoditization by kind of going upscale. So they created different brands that were, they started out with a Toyota Corolla, and I'm old enough to remember, they started out with an ad in the, they've been in this since the 60s, but I remember the Corolla for $3,748, okay? $3,748, that was the price of a Corolla. And that's all they sold, that was their only car. And then they started making other brands and other cars, and about 20 years ago, they really got into the luxury brands, which is the brand that had been traditionally owned by Cadillac and a few other American companies and a few other European companies like Mercedes. And they started creating a brand that was completely different, completely siloed, completely separate. That's how you create innovation. You create different silos within your company. So that's what a conservative entrepreneur does. So what is a conservative entrepreneur? Number one, you have to pick the right business. If you pick a business like a grocery store business with 2 or 3% net margins, you are on the cusp of making one mistake and you're done, okay? If you pick a business like we did in the hotel business where margins at the time were 30%, you can make a lot of mistakes. Do it cheaply, lower risk, mitigate risk. Lower risk means don't spend a lot of money. Mitigate risk means offload expenses onto other people if you can. Wants to make money, not spend it. We're not here to create an edifice for a business. We're not here to create, I don't know if you remember recently, there was a story about John Thane. Remember him? He was the head of Merrill Lynch, and he had an office that was decorated for him at his Merrill Lynch headquarters. And does anyone remember what the price of that office decoration was? $1 million for an office, okay? $1 million for an office. That bears repeating, $1 million for an office. So where didn't that money go to? It didn't go to the shareholders. It didn't go to the people that owned the company. It was wasted on some guy who was living like a pasha. You know, you can't do that as a conservative entrepreneur. Moves fast and has something to fall back on. Now, when we started this business, I married well, and I married a wife who was also a lawyer, and she's still with me somehow through all this. Bob and I started, I think Bob was at Gibson Dunn in Los Angeles, and I was at Johnson & Swanson in Dallas, and we were going to start a business, and we saw this opportunity. And we split my salary, and he would work days, I would work nights, and if everything failed, we could live off the earnings of my wife. And if everything failed again, if we absolutely had to and nothing else worked, we could always go back to practicing law. You know? I mean, if it absolutely had to. But fortunately, things worked out. So what we did was we started an airline ticket business that went very well for about 6 years. And we had just sold that ticket business. It was end of 1990, beginning of 1991. And we were going on a beach trip to Belize. And we were, of course, conservative entrepreneurs. So we rented a beach hut at, I think it was $13 a night. No air conditioning, you know, something like that. And we were going to go diving, you know, but that's what you do in Belize. You go diving off these boats. So we were not that conservative. I guess we like scuba diving too. But we sat in the room. We were both bored. We were 6 months out of the business. We were, I don't know, in our early 30s. And we said, okay, we got to do something else. So we kind of like, has anyone ever seen the movie The Paper Chase? Like that, maybe you remember the scene where he's studying for final exams and they go and closet themselves, I think it's some hotel room, and they plaster things around the wall. So that's what we did. We closeted ourselves. We never went diving. We plastered ourselves around in this little hut, and we put business ideas up on the wall, you know, up on the wall with a little scotch tape. And we said, okay, so what are we going to do? What business is likely to cash flow? What business is likely to do all these things that we like? And so we decided that, you know, we'd been in the airline ticket business, and we're kind of excluded from that. So let's do something that we really like. And we decided to do hotels. Hotels were overbuilt just as they are now, and they needed help, and we talked about how we did it. But then we changed it to the merchant model, and things went along well. And we were growing at a 30-40% clip, and then all of a sudden, this guy walks into my office. His name is Dave Ray. And Dave Ray says, I got this great new thing for you. It's 1994. It's going to change your life. You know, he walks into my office. He says, it's going to change your life. It's called the Internet. And I'm like, what's the Internet? And I'm like, no, actually, my first question is, what does it cost? Okay? So this is nothing. I'll build the whole site for you. I'll get everything for you. You know, all you have to do is pay me 5% of whatever you make off the site. So we launch a site that looks like that yellow thing up at the top. And then, you know, it evolves over time. But we get a reservation. I'll never forget, Mabel Wah from Hong Kong makes a reservation using our internet site. And this is some clunky internet site. This is not, you know, instant confirmation. This is like Mabel Wah sends a request. We have to process it, send her back an email, maybe 48 hours. You know, maybe she does it. Maybe her card charges. Maybe it doesn't. You know, anyway, so we get that back. And then the next reservation is from Seattle, Washington. Next reservation is from Canada. Next reservation is from France. And I call up Bob and says, oh, my God, this is it. You know, this is it. Let's hitch our wagon onto this. So I called Dave Ray. I said, Dave, this is a terrible system. You know, I don't know about this internet stuff, but I'll tell you what. We'll buy back your website at a small discount from what you paid for. I'm really sorry. And then we'll go about our way. And then we started building our website up and, you know, and saying, okay, this is good. So first year, maybe 5% of sales. The next year, maybe, you know, 25% of sales. And by the time we sold the business, 95% of sales were sourced to the internet. So, Bob, you want to talk about revenue growth?
Sure. Great. Thanks, Dave. So people ask us all the time, how did you create a successful business? What did we do? So let's start with revenue growth, because you want to grow your revenues, but that's not all you want to do. So this gives you an idea of our revenue growth. Now, how do we do this? I mean, these are pretty significant increases. Well, largely due to the internet, because now we had a business that was scalable, we could take it worldwide, we didn't need offices in all these different places. The internet really allowed us to expand our business in a great way and keep our costs down, because we could keep the personnel costs down, we could keep the office rental space down, and it really enabled us to keep our costs down. But a lot of companies had revenue growth like this. You heard of companies like Webvan, they're all a lot of different travel companies, tons of companies that are now out of business. Right, so what is the difference? What do we do different than all these other companies that didn't make it? We focused on EBITDA, or the bottom line, which is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So we made sure that our EBITDA, our earnings, were growing just like our revenue was growing. So most companies just focused on revenue. It was really an amazing thing. They said, we just got to keep growing the business. We've got the internet works, it can expand your business. But they forgot all about the bottom line. A business is all about the bottom line, and we see this all the time today. This is the fundamental reason why businesses don't succeed. They don't watch their bottom line, they're only focused on the top line. When you run a business, you have to focus on both. So we made sure that our earnings were growing as fast as our revenues, or even faster. But what else did we do? Dave talked about being innovative. So we had to come up with a way. See, we had a challenge. It's pretty expensive to go out there and market and buy full-page advertising and put ads in TV for the Super Bowl. So what do? Well, we got other people to do it. So we created what's called the affiliate model. And we developed this technology that enabled us to take our hotel site and make it look and feel like any other site that was out there. And very few people had any type of travel or online, you know, hotel program at the time. So we got on the phone, we started calling major companies, major airlines, car rental companies, convention and visitors bureaus, other tourism bureaus, and we said, look, we've got a great deal for you. We will build you a great source of income for your company. You've got a lot of people coming to your website, you've got a lot of customers. We'll give you a monetization opportunity. We're going to give you a turnkey system. We're going to give you a great hotel system. And you can offer it to your clients. It's going to look like it's your program. And we're going to give you a nice commission, and it's not going to cost you anything to build it. So it's a no-cost opportunity to earn income. And an amazing thing, we'd pick up the phone and we'd have a deal. We'd pick up the phone, we'd have a deal. So it was an amazing thing. We signed up thousands and thousands of affiliates that's under this program. Well, just going back for a minute, as we were growing and growing, we decided, you know what? We have great growth right now. We have a lot of penetration in various markets. The internet was, the stock market was going crazy, offering very high multiples at the time. We said, this is really the time to go public. We can raise public funds. What was the benefit of going public? Well, number one, it gave you a lot of publicity, because you definitely get out there in the marketplace. And number two, it will give us a currency to be able to acquire other companies and maybe acquire competition. So we decided, it was in late 1999, to go public. And I got to tell you an amazing story, because people ask me about, but what was it like going public? Well, we were very different than every company at the time. Most companies at the time were losing a fortune. As I talked about earlier, they were just growing revenues. We were growing profits at the same time. So we started approaching investment bankers on Wall Street. And they're all the ones that we've been reading about over the last year or so that just about went out of business, that were rescued by the government. And almost every single investment house told us the same thing. They looked, they said, Dave and Bob, you know what? It looks like a great business. You're very profitable, but there's one big problem. Our investors don't like profitable companies. You're too profitable. He said, this is not a model that works. The internet, you're supposed to spend a lot of, most of your revenues on marketing. You're only spending a few percentage points. You're supposed to show several continuous quarters of a loss. And if you do that, then we think our investors will have an appetite for your stock. But given that you have continuous earnings and they're growing, well, we don't think our investors will be interested in this. Now, just imagine this. This is what almost every single investment banker told us. You know, they're there with the bow ties and the suspenders, and they look at us very seriously, and they say, you know what? This business, you're making a profit. This doesn't make sense in the internet world. Nobody's going to buy this stock. We just looked at them and said, what are you talking about? An internet business should be like any other. Why should an internet business be different than any other business? We're here to make a profit. We're not going to spend all of our revenues in marketing and show. They told us, go back to the marketplace, spend a lot of dollars on advertising, and show us at least three quarters of losses. Then come back to us. This is what they were telling us. This was Wall Street back then. Well, we finally, after a lot of searching, we must have gone to 7, 8, 9, 10 of major investment houses. We finally found one that was conservative and said, you know what, we love this model. We think our investors will be interested in it. This really makes sense. And it turns out that we did go public in February 25th of 2000. Our stock was 20 times oversubscribed. And what happened to our stock? Well, our stock symbol was Vroom. We called it Vroom because our stock went up significantly. Okay, now why did it go up? People are always looking at the stock market and various stocks, and they say, why do stocks go up? Well, they can go up on the short term just based on frenzy and market psychology. And that's what happened in the internet world. Most of these internet stocks that went up hundreds of percent, several thousand percent in a short period of time, and then, of course, they ended up in bankruptcy. Well, what we did was we made sure that our earnings were growing, because your stock price over a longer period of time should be a reflection of your earnings, your growth in earnings, and your cost of funds or interest rates. That is what should determine your price of the stock. So if our earnings are going up and they're growing at a faster pace, we should have a command a higher multiple, and our stock price should be higher. And that's exactly what happened. Our stock kept going up, and a lot of the other companies at the time that didn't have earnings, their stock kept going down. Well, we decided, and we actually went public People think Hotels.com at the time was around for many years. Well, that's not the case. We actually went public under the name Hotel Reservations Network. And we focused mostly on the back end. But we had an executive meeting in early 2002. And one of the things that came out of that meeting, and a big important part of running a business, is listen to your employees. Listen to your customers. Listen to your employees. Listen to your affiliates. Because they're on the front lines, and they have great ideas. And you really need to listen. Well, we listened, and what came out of that meeting was that it was really time to come up with a good name, because Hotel Reservations Network, really didn't cut it. So there were various names tossed around, and the top name that came around was Hotels.com. And that received the largest votes of our executive committee. We actually knew the owners of Hotel.com and Hotels.com. And you can't just buy a plural on the internet. You couldn't have just bought Hotels.com, because you couldn't really build a business, because the person that owned Hotel.com would be siphoning off a lot of our business. So we'd be spending a lot of funds on advertising, and it wouldn't make sense. It'd get siphoned off to another company. So we had to buy both. So we went behind the scenes. We had a third party do it, because if Dave and I would have called them, the price would have gone way up. So we had a third party contact them, and we knew what kind of traffic they had, because they were affiliates. And we acquired those two names, and also a good phone number, 102 Hotels, behind the scenes. And now we came out with really a strong name, and we decided it's time to market directly to consumers. But how do you be a conservative entrepreneur and create TV commercials and advertise on television? It's very expensive. So we had to be creative. And we had to find a way to do this at a very low cost. So first we had to find some talent that was not going to charge us an arm and a leg. So we went out scoping for talent, and who do we find? Well, we found some great talent right here. It was very low cost. We found some other talent. We decided to find some good talent to write the commercials, so we wrote them. Dave and I went back and forth for a few weeks, and we passed it through our executive committee. We wrote the commercials. We directed the commercials. We decided that one thing we could do is we figured out most companies were spending a fortune making commercials. But if we used lower grade film, we did most of it in-house. Yes, it wasn't going to look like a first-class commercial, but you know what? They stood out because the film was a little different quality. It was a little more yellow than your typical flashy white commercial. So it stood out in the marketplace. And of course, having the founders in the commercial is easy for us to go on television as a consumer interest story, talking about the founders being in their own commercials. Well, then we got to air the commercial for free. So it had a great domino effect. And this was very effective in our ability to be able to get out there, have really national marketing at a very low cost. The point is, we were innovative. Being a conservative entrepreneur, you want to be innovative. Find new ways to keep your costs down. Well, what else did we do? We really focused on PR. Because PR is free, it's public relations. And we focused on doing a lot of consumer interest shows. I started doing a lot of radio talk shows. I got a call one day from John Hamilton. He's the host of KGO in San Francisco, one of the biggest shows in America. He says, you want to come on as my guest and talk about some travel deals? I said, sure. So I went on. And he says, do you want to come on every week? I said, well, sure, no charge, it's free. It's a great way to promote the company. And then all these other shows started calling me, hey, I hear you're on Hamilton's show. Why don't you come on my show? So started expanding this across America. Now, here was the opportunity to get on, talk about our company at the time. People would call in with questions. I'm going to Paris. I'm going to New York. I'm going to Chicago. What's the best deal? How do I do it? How do I save money? So we started getting all this free PR, and it didn't cost us a thing. So we were able to run our business, keep our cost of marketing low, and still keep growing our revenues and keep growing our bottom line. These are some of the creative commercials that we created. We created something with the tape measure. It was a massive tape measure where we launched a program that showed you how far your hotel was from actually where you want to go. And so we did that. The creative idea we came up with, we'll use a massive tape measure, have some guy go to the hotel, start at the hotel and walk down the streets of Manhattan or other cities. We had the local expert who was out inspecting properties, well, he got sunburned. So we came up with a lot of creative ideas. which, by the way, we're doing again now, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. You know, as our non-compete ended and we decided to start a new company, the dynamics were right because the industry was, when we started GetARoom.com, was very similar to what this was when we started this hotel reservations network, low occupancy, a poor economy, et cetera. We had to find a name that stood out in the marketplace. Well, we tossed around a lot of different names. We actually started with a name called Room Values, and people just couldn't remember it. So we finally came up, we found the name GetARoom.com, which right away we saw that we said, this is something that can really stand out in the marketplace. And so that's why we latched on to GetARoom.com. We're actually able to acquire it at a good rate. And because if you have a good name, people will remember it quickly. And you don't have to, it was the same with Hotels.com. You don't have to keep advertising it over and over and over to get consumer recognition. So a big part of our strategy was getting the right name and getting it at the right time. Well, this just shows you back then, gives you an idea of the online world versus the offline world. And in 2003, you can see that the offline world was 88%. I mean, 88% of the pie. In 2005, the internet only represented 22% of online bookings. Today, the majority of people do their research for travel online. So the world has really changed. So we embraced something that we saw a great demand coming for. We saw great opportunities for expansion. And that's all part of being a conservative entrepreneur and developing your business plan. Find something that has real growth opportunities. Find something that's going to continue to grow for the foreseeable future. But where else is growth? It was important for us to continue growing the company. We face this now as well. First, we launched domestically, and we decided about a month ago that we really need to expand internationally, and we launched several cities in Europe. Because you can't just, if you really want to have a large business and grow your business, you have to think globally today. You can't just think domestically. It's a much bigger world out there. People surf the internet from everywhere in the world. You can get your message out very easily. You can communicate via email. You can communicate via text. There's all kinds of ways. And you can do it, if you really want to expand, you've got to take your business and make it a broad global business. That's what we did with Hotels.com. That's what we're doing now with GetARoom.com. And you can see the mix. Back in 2002, when Dave and I were running Hotels.com, the international portion was only 17% of the business. But our projections back then were that it was going to be 60% of the business by 2008. And you can see what's going on in Europe now. Internet penetration in Europe is very significant. A very large percentage of people transact. Of course, they book their travel, they transact in other types of commerce online. The numbers are much smaller in South America. Asia is a great growth opportunity right now. So there's still lots of opportunities for growth. The world is still coming online more and more. Commerce is still getting more and more popular online. But the U.S., it's fairly mature at this point. So to expand your business, you really have to look at it globally. This just gives you some idea of the international growth opportunities when we look back at it from 2000 through 2004. But what's most important, and I'm going to turn this back over to Dave in a minute, in running a business, number one, focus on your bottom line. Okay, be conservative. But number two, your people. Make sure you have the right people. People make a business. We always run through this when we have people that we feel are, they're okay, they're not at the point where you really want to let them go, but they're not top performers. And so you're stuck with them for a long period of time and you end up with a mediocre company. So it's like in a law school wants the very best professors. And you know, our dean here is constantly looking, making sure that Cornell has the very best professors. It's the same in a business. You want to make sure you have the very best people. You want to find the very best people in the industry. This is our executive team, and we continue to do that. You've got to make sure you have the right personnel. People make the business. With that, let me turn it over to Dave.
And they also have to adopt your philosophy. And the philosophy they all adopted was conservative entrepreneurship. And we didn't have the name at the time, but they knew. I mean, they knew that, you know, if they were going to spend a dollar, they had to make a dollar. And it was, you know, critically important that that the team adopted this philosophy. So we talked about treating a company's money like your own, but there's a thing in corporate culture where people are afraid to make mistakes. They're afraid to take risks. They're afraid to take chances of things. There are a lot of ideas that people should try. So we try every one of them. We don't try every one of them in huge tests. We try everyone that we can think of that's reasonable, that's argued out, we'll do in beta. And we'll test it, and we'll measure it, and if it works, we'll expand it, and if it doesn't work, we'll cut it back. And that's, you know, that's just part of, you know, doing it. And, you know, there are a lot of companies that are kind of suppress innovation. This is the way we've always done it. It's worked in the past. We've been doing it for 30 years this way. Why should we do anything differently? Your law school doesn't do things. Your law school changes things constantly. This moot courtroom has changed. The way teaching changed. The online world. All the different programs. We met with a couple students in the back about a Tel Aviv program and a lot of other international programs and things that that create value in education. Same thing in business. You want to have a system which rewards innovation. And in business, you want to measure. Okay, so when someone comes to you with a project that says, you know, we want to open hotels in Sri Lanka. Okay, so how much is it going to cost? What's your maximum downside? And what's the potential upside? How many hotels are there in Sri Lanka? You know, that kind of thing. So you got to measure it. So we didn't know this. Bob and I have been through about 7 businesses, and all of them will work to some degree. So, knock on wood. And we put our businesses, and I guess a conservative entrepreneur would put their businesses through a filter. And this is the filter. And if you listen to one slide, look at this one. Okay. First of all, we like potentially big businesses in a large overall market. Better to be a small fish in a big pond than a big fish in a small pond. Low upfront investment. For hotels.com, we invested a total of $1,200. For our prior business, I think we invested $1,000. So I think, you know, we found the way to do that. High margins. We talked about you can make a lot of mistakes at a 30% margin. You can make zero when you're at a 2% margin. Good cash flow. The way hotels.com works is that we talked about the merchant model. We didn't talk about the cash flow. So today is the 26th of October. The average reservation is for the 26th of November. And the credit card we charge today. So if you charge $500 for your stay, we have that money today. Okay? The hotel bills us on the 26th of November, and we pay that bill on the 26th of December. So we have the money from the 26th of October to the 26th of December. That means that's called cash flow, and that's a very good thing. Okay, innovative opportunities, international expansion. We talked about immature industry that is highly fragmented. Fragmentation is good. And the reason we like hotels is because there are 6 airlines that make a difference, 3 cruise companies, 5 rental car companies, but thousands of hotels. A lot of individual hotels, especially in Europe and Asia. Even the chains have a kind of a loose control over their hotels themselves because they're franchised. So a guy may own a Marriott and a Hilton and a Holiday Inn all under one ownership group. So we like that. And low inventory risk. We're not taking a at-risk position in any of this. The rooms we can turn back without penalty. So we're not taking, if the room doesn't sell, it's not on our head. Diverse customer base, millions of customers, low expenses, and a business where creative marketing works. And Bob is the best at that. So are you a conservative entrepreneur? Skydiver? Sorry, you're out. Don't like to spend money, like to make money, understand customer, drive an older car. You know, when we had our IPO at hotels.com in 2000, it was just before the market crashed, actually. And I counted a year later when the stock options vested. We had a company, maybe 300 people in the Dallas office. We had 75 new cars in the parking lot within a week of the stock options vesting. And I'm like, what? 75? I was driving a 98 Acura, which I still have. So, why would you buy a new car? You know, just take your time. Use the money for something else, and don't do that. Brown bag your lunch. This is one of my favorites. Okay, so if you Brown bagged your lunch every day of your business career from the time you were 25 to the time you retired, and lunch costs an average of $6 a day, and you were able to get 7% on your money, how much money would you have? Any guesses? No math whizzes here?
$250,000.
Take it up.
$500,000.
More.
$750,000.
$600,000. $600,000. You'd have no friends, but you'd have $600,000. So you got to prioritize things. Confident, not arrogant. I like this too, because you know, when you're the head of a big public company and you're getting all this great press and you go to the Goldman Sachs conference and you're a real star, you know, your head starts to swell a little and you can't help it. So, you know, all these people are telling you great. And then you have your partner calling you up on the phone. What the heck are you doing here? What is this? Why is this thing a disaster? What are you doing? What are you sitting there? You know, and then I come home and, you know, I'm a big guy at work, you know, and everything. Well, I could take out the trash. Go read to the kids. You know, what are you doing here? So you don't get a big head. Team effort, work long hours, and have something to fall back on. Get a room, get a deal. So our five-year non-compete expired we won't say, but it expired in 2009. And shortly thereafter, we launched GetARoom.com because, as Bob said, you know, the hotel industry was down. And if you can see from that small chart, it shows basically hotel occupancy. And hotel occupancy in 2008, after the beginning of 2008, really took a nosedive. So it was lower even than when we started Hotel Reservations Network. But it's a different business, and the risks were a little higher, and we recognized that coming in. It's a business need we know well, but you know, the marketing expenses were higher. Google was, you know, a pretty efficient marketplace by this time. We didn't get rooms for our exclusive use and sale anymore. Margins, which we used to set the price for, are fixed. But they're still fixed, and they're still 20-25% margins, which is still pretty good. And I'm going to turn it over to Bob to talk a little more about Get a Room, Get a Deal. And go ahead, Bob.
Great. Thanks, Dave. So just in a few minutes we have left. One thing about creating a new business is you want to stand out in the marketplace. And we came into a business that's fairly well established, thanks to us. So there's very formidable competition. So how are we going to be different? Right, that's the number one question people ask us. How are you any different? Well, we had to create something new, because we created the current models that are out there in the online travel industry, which is the merchant model. So we decided that as we brainstormed, we came up with a lot of different ideas. We came up with a new creative idea that's totally different than anything that's ever been done in this industry. So it's called the reverse opaque. So there's some opaque models that are out there. In fact, there's another alumnus of the law school that's heading up another company that has an opaque type model where it's called a mystery hotel. You don't know what the hotel is, but you can bid on it, or maybe you can see the price, but you don't know what you're actually going to get until you put your credit card down, you pay for it, and then it's yours. Can't give it back. So a lot of people don't like that because they want to know where they're staying. It tends to work better with airlines and car rentals, not quite as well with hotels. So we came up with something new and novel. And the concept was that people want to know what the hotel is. So we show you the hotel. You can go on the internet. You can see the pictures. You can see the amenities. You can see everything you want to know about it. But we don't tell you the price. And the price isn't published on the internet. Only the lowest internet price is published. But the actual price you're going to pay can be a lot less if you pick up the phone and book it in the call center. That's kind of counterintuitive. People say, well, isn't everybody going online? Well, the problem is online is mainstream now. So many people are online that hotels don't really want to put the lowest price online. So we created this model. And the way it works is you search all your hotels on the internet. You figure out what you want, where you want to stay. You pick up the phone. Say, I want the unpublished rate in Chicago. We say, well, what category, what star rating are you looking for? What part of town? We say, OK, we've got these hotels are part of the special unpublished rate system. We can't tell you the price. You know the lowest internet price. You know the hotel. You can typically save 10 to 25% off the rate, as much as 50% off, but you have to book it before we tell you the price. And from the consumer perspective, hey, I can get even a better deal. I took a few extra minutes to pick up the phone. You go ahead and book it, and you save a good amount of money. So it's a new type of system. You know, the lowest internet rate may be, say, $150 a night for that hotel. You pick up the phone, you say, fine, I'll book it. After you book it, they'll tell you, well, the rate's $90 or $100, depending on, and they change all the time. This way, consumers got a great deal. Vendors are able to push more product in a different channel because they can sell it for a different price. They can capture a different part of the market, but they don't have to print that price, which would affect their overall marketing and strategy. So they can keep their prices up overall in the marketplace, but they want to move some extra product during a certain period. They don't have to do it through mainstream. They can do it through this new reverse opaque channel. So it's a totally new channel that we created, which is different in the marketplace. And now Dave and I were out, I'm going on TV nonstop, on the radio nonstop, talking about this new model, talking about how it works. People love it. And of course, after they book and save a good amount of money, what do? They tell all their friends about it. So we've really embraced something else called social marketing, social media, which wasn't around when we were at hotels.com, but we're really embracing it now, which means we update Twitter all the time. We're constantly expanding Facebook. We put special deals and opportunities on Twitter that we don't put anywhere else. So those that follow us on Twitter get them. So lots of people follow us on Twitter. Same with Facebook. And we're getting more and more active on YouTube. And there's lots of other, Delicious and tons of other social networking opportunities, which are new ways to tell people about your products in a very low cost. So the bottom line, it doesn't matter when it is or where you are, what you're doing, what the marketplace is at the time, there's always new ways to be a conservative entrepreneur and to keep your costs down. And with that, no, we only have a couple minutes, so we can open up for a couple questions if anyone has. And okay, well, Dave, any closing remarks?
Yeah, hold on.
We do have a question here.
Okay.
Yes,
go ahead.
I had a question. How, in the beginning, how did you guys go about recruiting hotels to become a part of your network, and how did that differ in the beginning from later on?
Well, that's a good question, because that was very difficult. You call them up, and who are you, and it's a new business, we never heard of you. Well, we found one hotel that was, after calling a lot of hotels, we found that was willing to deal with us. Because we were really an unknown entity. We weren't that well established when we started this merchant model. But we found one hotel that was interested in working with us. We actually got them to give us credit, even though we didn't have credit with any other companies. And it worked out well. And then we said, well, who are your friends in the industry here in town? They told us. We made another few phone calls. And it started expanding and expanding exponentially. So that's how we did it initially. And today, of course, they pick up the phone and say, it's Bob Diener, used to be with Hotels.com. Yeah, we've got a new company, a new concept. We'd like to add your hotel to the system. They already know who we are. But doing it initially, it's always the first few are the toughest. You know, the saying in the business, your first few thousand dollars, your first few hundred thousand dollars of profit are the toughest. Your first $1 million of revenue is the toughest. Then once you have the system down, it expands much easily.
Yes.
Which event triggered you guys having a five-year non-compete? Was Hotels.com bought by some other company or something?
It was bought by IAC, a company called, at the time it was called USA Networks, but it went through a few iterations. But as part of the purchase agreement, we agreed to a five-year non-compete. That was a long 5 years. You should get a good lawyer and not agree to such a long non-compete.
Against yourselves in a way now? Is that how you're describing the old Hotels.com?
It's true. It's kind of like Chinatown. My sister, my mother. No, it's kind of strange. But we have to compete against Hotels.com. So that's right. That's one of our competitors.
Right. But also it's such a big marketplace that we have the opportunity to do is to lift the boat for the whole industry. Especially what's happened now is there are so many people that are on the sidelines over the last year. People didn't travel. They put dollars away. They say, well, I don't want to travel now. Things are so bad. I'm going to wait. So there's a lot of pent-up demand. So we have a lot of opportunity to really lift the boat for the whole industry, get people excited again about traveling. There's a new way to do it. There's a new method. So people get excited about it. More and more people go. So it helps the entire industry. So in a way, yes, there's competition, but it's not necessarily competition because it's such a big marketplace. And there's so many people that aren't going that we can get to go. I think we have time for one more.
Okay. So have you actually done consumer feedback to get input that they like this kind of gambling model where they don't know what they're actually getting?
Well, they know what they're getting. They don't know the price.
Well, they, mean, so do they feel good about getting this lower price?
Yeah, of course they do.
And that feedback that you get is that they like the model where they don't know the prices until they book it?
It's a new model. So the answer is, do we get consumer feedback? Yes, we do. And do we do consumer surveys? Yes, we do. And what's the ultimate consumer survey? Whether they buy or not. You know, that's the ultimate consumer survey. I mean, you can, you know, surveys have limitations because people tell you what you want, they think you want to hear. But it's selling well, and we're developing, you know, we have to educate the hotels too. It's not just about the consumer, it's getting the hotels to put product in. And first it was a real struggle to get some of the hotels to do it, and now we're getting more and more, and we're getting more and more per market. Consumers are liking more, and it's a virtuous circle.
But the answer is also that before creating the model, we did do a lot of surveys. Even with our name, getaroom.com, we had about 10 names that we liked. And we surveyed about 150 people that we thought were knowledgeable in the industry, and we just had them rank them. It's the same with the various models. We did a lot of surveys because you want to know the feedback. Don't rely just on yourself. So yes, one is doing the feedback initially, and two is getting the continuous feedback because you can constantly improve the program. And the feedback from our customers and also from our hotel partner vendors.
Right.
We need feedback on both sides.
So for those of you that are thinking about business, I mean, it could be a law practice, it could be a lot of different things, but for us it was not a law practice. But if you are careful, frugal, quick, and innovative, you'll have the best chance to succeed.
Right, but all our skills that we learn here in the law school, we apply them every day.
Yeah, we do.
Every day, they're invaluable to our success.
They are.
There's no question about it.
Okay. Thank you very much.